You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. On this week's episode, we present part one of our projected six-part retrospective on the James Bond films, beginning with the Sean Connery and George Lazenby movies. And here to discuss them with me is my regular co-host on the AU Wishbone Show and my semi-regular guest host on this show, John Ringer. Welcome back aboard the show, John.
Thanks for having me, Van. Always fun to be here.
Always good to have you on the pop culture show as well as the sports show, so we can have fun talking about something besides, you know, football for a change. Just kind of mix things up a little bit. So, now, I have to tell the folks, way back in episode 4, I believe this will be episode 55, believe it or not. We're all the way up to White Rocket 055, 55 since the fall of 2012. And way back in episode 004, I know it should have been episode 007, I know, but it just didn't work out that way. Because what happened was Skyfall came out, and we were trying to get a James Bond show together right before it, just when people would be thinking about, you know, James Bond. And I didn't know how long it would take me to do two or three more episodes and get to 007. So episode 004, David Medinas joined me just prior to the release of Skyfall to talk about the entire James Bond universe, including the books, the movies, and so forth. And we crammed everything into like an hour, and we barely had time to really scratch the surface on anything much. So this time around, I wanted to get a lot more specific than a single hour would allow for covering so much material. We're not going to talk about the books. We're not going to talk about much else except when needed to kind of explain or set something up. We're going to focus on just the movies over a three-part series of podcasts. And here's how we're going to do it. Tonight, we're going to cover the Sean Connery and George Lazenby films. Then in the second episode down the road a little bit, we will do Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton. And then in the final one, we will do Pierce Brosnan and Daniel Craig's movies. And that gives us a nice breakdown of each of the six, two apiece. Now, that means that tonight we'll be looking at Dr. No from Russia with Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball. Man, that's a powerful run right there. Mm-hmm. You Only Live Twice, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and Diamonds Are Forever, plus 1983's Never Say Never Again, very briefly, probably very, very briefly, because it's the only non-Eon film of the bunch. Before we kind of get into it, John, let's establish your 007 bona fides. Which of the six Bonds is probably your favorite? And that doesn't mean which is the best, because that's a different question. And I have a different answer when people ask me who was the best Bond and which is your favorite. And a lot of our listeners already know. So which is your favorite?
Of the six Bonds. I mean, I really enjoyed Connery. Yeah. I grew up in the era when Roger Moore was Bond. Mm-hmm. But it just got too silly after a while with him, and Bond wasn't tough enough, I thought. And then, I do really like Daniel Craig too. I mean, I think he's been really good in the role. So,
and a very different take.
I would say Connery.
You know, if somebody didn't know, just coming in from like outer space, and you showed them a Roger Moore Bond, certainly not Live and Let Die, because he was still kind of more hardcore in Live and Let Die. But as time went by, you know, Roger Moore got more Roger Moore-ish. If you showed them a later Roger Moore Bond and then you showed them a Daniel Craig Bond, there's no way they would think it was the same franchise.
That's right.
I mean, it's like two completely different things. So we'll talk about that actually in probably episodes 2 and 3 of this. So, it's pretty well established. I think that the best one still is Connery, early Connery. Now, he very rapidly declined, and we'll talk about that tonight. But the early Connery in those first 4 or 5, you just can't touch. But my favorite Bond, it will always be Pierce Brosnan, because I liked him a ton even before he became James Bond. I rooted for him to get the role twice, when he got it and then lost it, then got it again. And I loved his performance and his persona in all 4. So we'll talk about that a good bit when we get to
I have some feelings about some of his movies.
Okay. Yeah. Well, now his movies are a different thing. I mean, he had a declining quality of material to work with. There's no doubt about it. But just as far as he himself goes, I just really, because I'd been a big fan of his on Remington Steele and on Noble House and things like that. So getting to see him as Bond was just the cherry on top of the cake. So, all right. So very quickly, I'm sure that most people who are interested in this topic will already know this. But for those that don't, I'm going to just give a really quick introduction of where it all came from. And then we'll kind of get into the movies one by one so that we'll have plenty of time to talk about them. What happened was Ian Fleming, who had been basically a secret agent himself in World War II, he was sort of an English aristocrat, you know, but he got pulled into sort of the spy business. And after the war, he sort of more or less retired to Jamaica, to his house called Goldeneye in Jamaica. And he was therefore very familiar with the Caribbean, with the Bahamas and Jamaica and all that, which is, I think, in part why so many of the Bond. Have you noticed that so many of the Bond stories happen in the Caribbean or in Miami, or, you know, the Bahamas, Miami, Jamaica? They all pop up over and over and over again, especially in the early ones, or even Haiti. Basically, that was Haiti in Live and Let Die. So the Caribbean comes up a lot. So he was living there, and he decided just to start cranking out these spy novels based on a lot of the stuff he had learned, you know, during the war. And so in the mid, late 1950s, he starts writing them. And wanted them to get them made into movies. And finally, these two guys, Cubby Broccoli and Salzman, Albert Salzman came along and got the rights to do the movies. And they didn't have a fortune between them, but they took basically every penny they both had and founded Eon Productions, which stands for Everything or Nothing. In other words, they were rolling the dice, everything they had, that James Bond would be a success. And it really paid off for him. Here's what's kind of amazing about that. What do you suppose the budget was for Dr. No in 1962?
In 1962 dollars?
Yeah.
At $10,000?
Yeah, like, that's $1 million.
Okay.
And then From Russia or Love was $2 million. Goldfinger was $3 million. I want to say Thunderball jumped all the way to $9 million because all the underwater stuff. But by then, they'd made so much money. These guys were real penny pinchers. So Sean Connery was always complaining he wasn't getting paid enough, and the budget was up until Thunderball was increasing very incrementally. You can really look at Dr. No, and for all that's brilliant about that movie, you can tell it cost kind of chump change for its time. You know, it didn't have great effects, but it made up for it with style, I think. So anyway, they began making those movies, and they were making them every year for a while. Can you imagine a new James Bond movie every year?
It'd be awesome.
It would be fantastic. So 62, 63, 64, 65, they made them every year. But what was funny was by the time they got to Thunderball, the fourth of the every year movies, they were like still painting the sets while they were filming. I mean, they just didn't have enough time. So they decided to start skipping a year. So they did 67 and 69 and 71, and they would go on to make a Bond movie. That's all that Eon does, is make James Bond movies. It's like if 20th Century Fox only made Star Wars movies every 2 years and had done it for 50 years. All Eon does is make James Bond movies, and they made them every 2 years after 1965. For a long time. In fact, they didn't break that cycle from 1965. They made one every 2 years, I want to say until 1989. And then when Dalton left, they waited until 1995. There were legal complications that have been behind a lot of this, which we're going to talk about starting tonight. And they waited until 95 to come back with Pierce Brosnan. So it's been a lot more sparse since 1989. We haven't gotten anything like every 2 years. In fact, the only 2 year gap we've had since then was from 06 to 08 with Quantum of Solace after Casino Royale. So I think they settled now into kind of a 3 year cycle because we're getting Spectre this year. Oh, this is the year we get Spectre. I'm so excited. All right. So we have a lot to say tonight about Spectre because these Connery movies are the Spectre movies.
Absolutely.
You know, for those who don't know, Spectre's the original evil organization that Mike Myers made so much fun of in the Austin Powers movies and all that. But they were the original, you know, evil. All the agents have numbers, just like the 007 guys have numbers. Number one, number two, number three. And number one was Ernst Stavro Blofeld, who I love because he's a supervillain and he's Belgian and has a cat, which is awesome. And a jumpsuit.
Does he have a monocle?
He in different movies, he has different things. I mean, he's bald. He has hair. He has different things in different movies. That's another thing we'll talk about is how these movies each of these movies kind of exist in the same universe, and they each kind of exist in their own separate universe. It's kind of weird how the continuity works. And sometimes they skip a movie or they'll skip 10 years before they'll come back, you know, to what you think would be next. So we'll talk about that too. But yeah, these are the Spectre movies, and for those that don't know, to kind of round this out, there's been a whole legal wrangling for decades over Blofeld and Spectre that goes back to Thunderball, and we're going to talk about what that was in a little bit, but it's just in the last couple of years been resolved, and now Eon Productions has the right to Blofeld and Spectre again, and so they immediately announced that the new one, the sequel to Skyfall, is going to be called Spectre, and I about jumped out of my chair and out of my pants and everything. I'm so excited. So we get the evil octopus ring, you know, and all that. So and get Blofeld back. I can't wait. So, all right. 1962. All right. This is the swinging 60s. We're just getting underway. JFK was president, and the Eon Productions guys, to start off, just completely ignored the order of the books. And that's going to be that's going to cause recurring problems because the books were written in order with continuity. And so they kind of have to fudge the stories to make them make any sense. It's kind of like if Lucas had filmed Attack of the Clones first and then Empire Strikes Back, you know, and then Star Wars and then Revenge of the Sith and then Jedi, you know, they screwed up the order. And so they had to redo the stories in these. Dr. No is a much later book. But it worked for kind of a low budget beginning.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
They looked at the books and said, "We like this one. People will go to see the movie, and we can afford it."
And we can afford it, right. And they made the more expensive ones a bit later on, like kind of culminating with Moonraker, which you couldn't have begun to make in 1962, right? So, and some would say, and shouldn't have made in 1979. But that's a whole other story because I like Moonraker. All right. So, Dr. No. What are your first sort of initial thoughts before we dig all into it? I'm going to kind of do this for each one if I remember. Let me go ahead and introduce 1962, Dr. No.
I admire your luck, Mr.
Bond. James Bond. If you carry a 00 number, it means you're licensed to kill, not get killed.
Welcome to Jamaica, Mr. Bond.
News of my arrival leaked.
Who are you working for?
We didn't advertise it.
What else do we know about this Chinese gentleman?
Nothing except his name, Dr. No.
I'm a member of Spectre.
World domination. Same old dream.
Why is he still alive?
Our attempts failed.
You're not going to fail me again.
I thought you'd turn up sooner or later.
Very clever, Mr. Bond.
Mr. Smith and Wesson, and you've had your six.
What are you doing here? Looking for shells?
No, I'm just looking. I thought there might even be a place for you with Spectre.
Well, I'm flattered. I prefer the revenge department.
I never fail, Mr. Bond.
All right, so that's Dr. No. So what I'm going to do this for each one. What do you think of when I say Dr. No?
Well, the first thing I think of when you say Dr. No is Ursula Andress coming out of the ocean and in bikini.
Absolutely.
Because classic. I'm male. So classic. I think of that. And then I think of Bond in Jamaica, mm-hmm. you know, going to the key where Dr. No was, and it was an attack. They had like a truck with a flamethrower on it.
Yeah,
and
that was the best thing to do, yeah.
And they get captured and they escape, and he was going to disrupt the moon launch.
Mm-hmm.
Which
was a big thing in the 60s because the U.S. was actually in the, you know, the Gemini and an early Apollo phase at that point. So the Bond films have always been very topical to current events in that way.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, bad guys disrupting a space launch, like from shooting a ray from the Caribbean to Cape Canaveral or whatever, that was the plan, and he disrupts Dr. No and they escape and blow it up. But I really think about her, you know, I think about the truck with the flamethrower and the scenery in Jamaica, Bond interacting with the locals, kind of going fishing and stuff. And then and also the, you know, introducing Spectre.
Yeah, yeah. Spectre was very underplayed in the Dr. No movie, but it was definitely connected because they basically in From Russia with Love, the next one, which we'll get to in a second, you know, the whole plot was Spectre trying to assassinate Bond in revenge for killing Dr. No. Because I think basically Dr. No was like number two to Blofeld, roughly, and he gets replaced eventually by the villain in Thunderball, whose name will occur to me when I bring that page up on Wikipedia in just a second. When we get to Thunderball, yeah. So there's always kind of a number two in the first few movies under Blofeld. So, yeah, I think about Dr. No, and it's a shame. You know, we look back now, and it's a shame that they couldn't use an actual Asian actor to play Dr. No. But that was movies in the early 60s, you know, and for a while after, but. Joseph Wiseman, who just passed away a year or two ago, he did a pretty darn good job, I think, as kind of the menacing, inscrutable, you know, Eastern villain.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it's hard to ever top Ursula Andress in the famous, you know, the bikini had just been invented. They had, you know, it was named after the little atoll, the little island in the Pacific that they blew up with the first hydrogen bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, it's so hot, you know, that it's like a hydrogen bomb. But that movie, Dr. No introduced so many of the tropes that we would come to love, like the James Bond theme, the gorgeous Bond girl in a swimsuit of some kind that he rescues, the evil supervillain with something kind of weirdly wrong with him, you know, like the mechanical mm-hmm. hands. It's a very rough movie because it's very early, but there's so much about it that surprisingly holds up, you know. Connery was at his absolute smoothest. He was still pretty young. He was in shape. He gives that iconic, you know, introduction where he sits down at the card table and puts a cigarette kind of dangling out of his mouth and says, mm-hmm. Bond, James Bond, you know. And mm-hmm. I mean, that would just set the tone. Every actor that played Bond after that had to do it something like that. In fact, you know, I heard an interview with Pierce Brosnan where he basically says that the first time he had to say that line beforehand, he was nervous as anything. And he's like, you know, how do I do it? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm James Bond. You know, it's real. I've got to say the line. You know, how am I going to do it? So it really sort of set the bar for coolness. And as you pointed out at the beginning, I mean, Connery really is the best. And, you know, everybody would be trying to match Connery and Dr. No for the next 50 years.
It's true. I mean, it really did set the standard. And it also, the thing is kind of traveling to exotic locale and interacting with the locals and that kind of stuff, too, I think is another strong part of all the Bond movies.
Yeah, having a local guy that's his ally. I think we get the first Felix Leiter in this one. We get Quarrel, who is like the local boat operator that helps him.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they kill Quarrel off in this one is too bad because this story came later and Quarrel was actually in some of the other ones. and they'd already killed him, so they had other characters that kind of took his place in the later ones. That was too bad. We get M for the first time. We get Money Penny for the first time. We get Q for the first time. And it's a small story. I mean, you know, honestly, it's funny that the Bond films after this sort of go back and forth. They'll go through a period of bigger, bolder, you know, outer space, giant laser guns, volcano bases, and then they'll go back down and go guys sneaking around, you know, chasing more reasonable bad guys. And so you really do get this back and forth pendulum of Bond movies where he's a spy sneaking around versus he's a superhero trying to stop a gigantic, you know, world exploding thing or something. So it's fascinating how they go back and forth like that. Which ones do you tend to like better, the giant world shaking ones or the small sort of spy ones?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I like them both. Maybe the more spy kind of ones, because I like spy stuff. I mean, but I mean, I do love the big one, the kind of epic feel, the bigger ones.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, I'm glad that they do both, you know, because it gives you a nice variety. And also, every time they feel like they've messed up one way, they can kind of go back and start fresh the other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so and you can kind of tell the actors that way. Like when they bring in a new actor, they tend to go small again, right? I mean, like when they brought in Roger Moore, it was just him versus a kind of crime lord guy in the Caribbean. And then eventually it's like Moonraker and View to a Kill and all, you know. So they all kind of start small and get bigger and bigger and bigger until they're just too goofy and then they're done, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, think about Daniel Craig starting with Casino Royale, which was a very small story. I mean, it was a lot of emotion, but it was a very small story. So now we're going to have Spectre with him. See, they're doing it again. They start small and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. So, okay. So not a whole lot, I guess, to really dig into about Dr. No, specifically. It was a fairly small movie, but it did establish so much that's cool. Let's go ahead and bring in the next year, 1963, From Russia with Love.
Come in, Kronstein.
I've planned for Spectre to steal from the Russians their new lector decoding machine. Neither the Russians nor the British will be aware that they are now working for us.
You're sure this plan is foolproof?
Yes, it is. Because I have anticipated every possible variation of countermove.
Except for one thing.
Now, Mr. Bond here. I've never even heard of a Tatiana Romanova.
Of course, girls do fall in love with pictures of film stars.
So you're Tatiana Romanova.
You look just like your photograph.
No, it's some sort of trap.
And the bait is a cipher machine. If there's any chance of us getting a lector, we simply must look into it.
Welcome to Istanbul.
How is she going to get the machine over to us?
She's leaving that to me. She'll do anything I say.
Anything. My friend, she's got you dangling.
That doesn't matter. All I want is that lector.
What?
Well.
An ordinary black leather case. From the side here, flat throwing knife.
My orders are to kill you and deliver the lector. How I do, it's my business.
Let his death be a particularly unpleasant and humiliating one.
Tell me, which lunatic asylum did they get you out of?
Take it easy, 07. My escape route's only for one.
Life in Istanbul will never be the same without you.
That would be splendid.
And that movie, it's a double the budget, but in some ways it's an even smaller movie. Now, this is interesting to me. From Russia with Love, he goes to some different exotic locations. He goes to Istanbul for the first time and meets his buddy, Bey, Karim Bey, who is awesome, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yes.
And who has a, you know, he just, Karim Bey is awesome because he's working with the NATO crowd against the Soviets and their allies. And so he just relishes spying on the communists. You know, he's got all these secret looking devices and listening devices to keep an eye on the communists. He follows the Bulgarians around, right, and screws around with them. It's hilarious. I love Karim Bey. And his sons do everything for him because he trusts them.
Mm-hmm.
From Russia with Love is neat. Let me get your, what's kind of your impressions when you think back to From Russia with Love?
Well, I mean, Russia with Love is more of a classic Cold War spy story
mm-hmm.
than some of the other stuff they did. I mean, it is, they're trying to steal a cryptographic device, mm-hmm. And they go to Istanbul to try to get it back, and then they end up riding on the Orient Express, the first of many dramatic train rides in Bond series history.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're fighting on the train and stuff, which is, you know, people are dying on the train, that kind of thing. And there's a girl, but it's not, you know, it's a little bit different, because she's kind of being used as bait.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the lead, one of the lead bad guys is
Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw. I believe, but then also Rosa Klebb. Girl.
Rosa Klebb, yeah.
He's like an ex-Soviet agent.
Yeah, there's a neat twist that they do with this story. I believe in the book, I've read the book within the last couple of years, it's all Soviet stuff. They work for SMERSH, which is death to spies and all that. But in
Smets Bionum.
Yeah, there you go. But in the movie, they change it around that it's actually Spectre. So now we find out that Spectre is mad that Bond killed Dr. No in the first movie. And so they're trying to lure him into their deadly trap and discredit him or kill him by using Tatiana Romanova, and it's the gorgeous Daniela Bianchi, and I think she's one of my favorite Bond girls. Daniela Bianchi is just gorgeous in this movie.
Absolutely.
Oh man, and and she makes such a great, you know, she's so innocent, and she's just trying to serve her country, as she thinks, and she's actually working for Spectre and doesn't even know it. You know, she thinks she's mm-hmm. working for the Russians, and she actually falls in love with Bond, and of course he has to be the cynical, you know, Sean Connery Bond, which leads to one of my absolute favorite lines, certainly in that movie, where she's kissing all on him and all he's thinking about is the Lecter machine, which originally was a Spectre machine, but they've changed it because Spectre. All he's thinking about is his job is to find out about the Lecter machine. When he's kissing on her and everything to try to romance the information out of her. And this is really like the first movie where, you know, because Honey Rider and Dr. No didn't really have any information. She was just an innocent victim he was protecting. But mm-hmm. Tatiana has information he needs. So we get the first time that Bond has to romance some secret, sensitive information out of a woman. And so he's all focused on the information in the machine. And she's, of course, actually fallen in love with him because he's James Bond. And so they're kissing and making out. So I'm going to get this quote wrong, but the gist of it is she's like, "Oh, James, will you make love to me in London?" And he's like, "Night and day. Now, where's the machine?" I just love how he's so offhand. "Night and day. Now, where's the machine?" So that's one of the classics. But the big thing in From Russia with Love is that we get the first real sort of major henchman, which is Red Grant, played by Robert Shaw. Donald Red Grant, and he's this assassin whose only job in life, you know, is to kill Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And so you mentioned the Orient Express. You get that great sequence at the end where he's trying to get in buddy-buddy with Bond so he can kill him. And it's also the first time, I think, more or less, that Bond has a set of gadgets given to him by Q to kind of mm-hmm. help him. And, of course, it's always just the right thing that he needs for the particular thing that happens to him. You know, he always gets just the right equipment.
That's right.
At the beginning. So
it's the briefcase in this case.
Yeah, it's the briefcase. It's got like a throwing knife and just randomly some gold coins, because you never know when you might need those to bribe, you know, the guy. And like an exploding can of powder or something.
Tear gas or something.
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah, so that one, you still have a very fit, very cool Sean Connery at the top of his game. It's a fairly small movie again, but I mean, a lot of people, it's one of their favorites. Where do you rank From Russia with Love is like one you go back to?
No, I think it's really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, just because, again, like you said, I love the stuff in Turkey. I love his ally in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And also, I just enjoy kind of the Cold War spy story part of it.
Yeah, but, yeah. Which you don't get as much of in some of them, you know. You get off on the Blofeld stuff, which is cool, but you don't get as much of just the sort of Cold War spying that's so neat.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a movie that could have been made without Spectre at all.
Right.
You know, it was not necessary.
So. Yeah, and they weren't in the book. Yeah, they just sort of put that in. So, because basically almost all the Connery ones have to have it. Not all, but a bunch of them. So, yeah, I rate... Bianchi is one of my favorite Bond girls. I love Robert Shaw. He's awesome as the assassin. And I also really like, this is the one where you have Kronstein, the Eastern European chess master whose job is to come up with evil schemes for Spectre. Mm-hmm. I just love that they have an evil communist chess master whose job is to think of evil things for Spectre to do. That's awesome, you know. And then he, of course, gets the ultimate punishment because Blofeld loves to kill the unexpected person when they fail him. You have failed me again, you know. and then you've got, of course, as you mentioned, the awesome Rosa Klebb, who's the former Soviet officer, and now she's working for Spectre, and she has the dreaded spiked boot to kick you with.
That's right.
And he's holding her off with a chair. She got her kicks. And, you know, I guess you start getting, I don't know if you maybe did in Dr. No, but you start getting the little quips, which, mm-hmm. which Connery does with some gravitas, but I think Roger Moore later turns into, like, you know, just kind of silliness.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Connery could throw a quip in and it would lighten a very deadly mood, you know, whereas Moore kind of made it his stock in trade and it wasn't as powerful. But they all try to do it. So even Daniel Craig tries to throw in a line like that. I think with him, it falls a little bit flat because he's just not funny and he's not trying to be funny. So when he tries to be funny, it doesn't work so well. But well, those two are fairly small movies, but then we get to the one that really sort of is considered as starting up what we think of as the franchise, the Bond franchise, because it's where all the pieces first came together. Now, the 1964 entry, the third film, is Goldfinger.
It's lost its chill.
Why, you?
Sorry, there's another in the fridge. This isn't a personal vendetta, 007. It's an assignment like any other.
What do you know about gold? Not paying for bullion.
I know it when I see it. Auric Goldfinger.
Mr. Goldfinger has gold bullion on deposit in Zurich, Amsterdam, Caracas, Hong Kong.
I think it's time Mr. Goldfinger and I met.
My name is Pussy Galore.
I must be dreaming.
You have interfered with my plans for the last time, Mr. Bond. Oh, you must excuse our job.
My plan is foolproof, gentlemen. Fort Knox is a bank, like any other.
You plan to break into the world's largest bank, but not to steal anything.
Precisely.
Well, if you exploded in Fort Knox, the entire gold supply of the United States will be radioactive for 57 years.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Mr.
Now, Goldfinger, it may not be the best. Some people think it's the best, some don't. It has some things lacking to it, but it's the one where they really first put all the pieces together that would ultimately become the franchise. You know, it's got the opening, it's got the music, it's got the classic theme song. I mean, From Rush with Love is a good theme song, but Goldfinger is the one that really has the classic theme song. And it's got a great supervillain. And here's an interesting thing. You'd think Goldfinger would be another Spectre guy, but I don't think he's ever mentioned to be a Spectre guy. He's just kind of on his own.
He's just a bad guy.
Yeah, that wants gold.
And who has a great sidekick or assistant.
Oh, he's got the classic henchman in Odd Job. Yeah. So, all right. Again, what are your thoughts when you think of Goldfinger?
I mean, I think of, you know, Goldfinger. It's the he wants gold, the plot at the end to break into Fort Knox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where all the theoretically all the American gold was stored at Fort Knox.
That's the classic crime, you know?
It is. And so, but then also, the one thing I always remember about this movie is it's such a, you know, British gentleman thing. Like, Bond and Goldfinger play golf together.
Yes,
and Bond switches Goldfinger's golf ball out, so Goldfinger is assessed a penalty.
Yeah.
And that's what I always think about. It's you're the spy. He's an international criminal intent on like taking over the world or whatever, and you're busting him for cheating at golf.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things is that the Bond villains always cheat. That's a neat thing. They all.
No, but he didn't cheat. Bond set him up.
Well, but I think he was kind of I think it's made a little bit clear in the dialogue between the caddy and Bond that Goldfinger is kind of cheating.
Right.
And so Bond is like, well, Altua can play at that game. I'll get him back, you know. So because he's doing something to improve his lie a few times. So one of the times he does it, Bond switches the ball out. Yeah. But I think that's one of the things that Fleming and then the movie people later kind of do is that they say that the I'm glad that you mentioned that because this is the thing. They act like that. See, they lay out for you that the Bond villains, they're classy, they're rich, they're powerful, but they still feel the need to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all. And oftentimes, that's their downfall. They're never satisfied. They always want to cheat, and that's where Bond gets them with their vanity and with their vulnerability that way. And Goldfinger is really the first one where he takes advantage of the vanity and the you know, because at the very beginning of the movie, what's Goldfinger doing? He's playing cards with some guy in a hotel in Miami and cheating.
That's right.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. He's got, you know, millions of dollars. Does he really need to sit there and play for a few thousand dollars with some random guy at the swimming pool? But he just can't help it. He's got to cheat. He's got Jill Masterson, another one of the gorgeous early Bond girls, and the one that famously is covered in gold paint, probably by Odd Job, up in the hotel room watching and telling him what the cards are. So Goldfinger cheats at everything and ultimately, you know, Bond gets him. Now, this one's got the famous line where Goldfinger has him strapped down to the table with a laser gun, and he says, You expect me to talk, Goldfinger? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. And that's a, you know, a classic bit. Well, what about Operation Grand Slam? Erk!
Then he says, choose your next quip carefully, Mr. Bond, and maybe your last.
Yes, exactly. And this is also the one where you get the Bond villain that has to explain his master plan to the underlings. Mm-hmm.
Bond is
hiding under the display and watching everything, which is
he has to lay the whole plan out for everybody where Bond can hear it.
Yeah, and then kills them all. So what was the point?
Yeah, I bet that was why and, tell people something you're going to do and then kill them.
And we also have the most famous Bond girl name, Pussy Galore's Flying Circus. And, you know, famously in the book, she was actually a lesbian, and that's why the name is supposed to be, you know, more meaningful and blah, 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 blah. And actually, do you know that when they the original line was when she says, I'm Pussy Galore, he's supposed to say, oh, I can see that. But instead, they filmed a different one where he goes, I've died and gone to heaven, you know. So and Bond shows that his powers of wooing women even extend to switching lesbians over to not being lesbians anymore. He seduces her, too, with his magical, you know, powers. So yeah, this one was a big one. It just exploded on the screens. You have the Aston Martin with all the, you know, different gadgets for the first time.
The car was huge.
Oh yeah. You know that kids in the 60s just all wanted to go out and get some kind of cool car with machine guns and oil slick sprayers and all that. The rolling over license plate. Yeah. So.
And then the other thing I was thinking about is Odd Job with his hat with the little razor blade around the edge.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff.
Mm-hmm. He crushes a golf ball just to show how bad he is, you know, and then he throws the hat to chop off a statue's head, and Bond gets him with the electrical cables as he's trying to defuse the bomb, the atomic bomb that's going to go off. Anything else about Goldfinger? I mean, this was it was a huge hit, and it really made the franchise, I think.
No, and it was really, like you're saying, it may be the first real complete movie in terms of all the things you think about in a Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every different thing, kind of checkbox you'd want to have for a Bond movie, this had it.
Right, right, yeah. And they continue, you know, sort of this tradition they'd gotten into with he comes in to talk to M and has a little repartee with Moneypenny, and then Q gives him his gadgets and everything. So they kind of established at that point the formula that would be the formula going forward. And that gets us to the end of the first installment of our James Bond retrospective. But before we're done, a little something special. I'm joined now by Mira Plexico. Welcome aboard the White Rocket Show, Mira.
Hola.
And tell the folks how old you are.
6.5 years old.
Okay. And would you say you're a big James Bond fan?
Totally.
You've pretty much seen all of them, haven't you?
Yeah.
At least once each, if not more than once.
I've seen pretty much all of them twice or a couple of more times, I think.
And of all the James Bonds, which of the James Bond actors is your favorite?
Timothy Dalton, the one that nobody else likes except pretty much me. And, Sean Connery.
Yes. So you're a Sean Connery fan. That's very cool. You appreciate how slick and cool he is, right?
Yep.
Out of all of the movies, which one would you say is probably your favorite? Or do you have kind of a set of them that's your favorite?
Oh, that one's a tough one.
I mean, I know you like the early Sean Connery one. So, like, do you like Dr. No or...
Oh, completely Dr. No.
You really like Dr. No, don't you?
Yep.
And let's see, Thunderball?
Yeah.
That's a good one, isn't it? Do you like You Only Live Twice?
Yeah.
With Kissy?
Yay, Kissy.
You like Kissy. That's cool. Just recently over the holidays, we watched all the Sean Connery ones.
Yep.
And the Timothy Dalton one that we got to watch.
Yep.
And we watched more or less the... we had to be careful what we watch about some of them, obviously, since you're... six, but you got to watch some of the Daniel Craig ones.
Yep.
Now, let's play a quick game of figure out what
the
movie.
Theme song.
Yeah, I'm going to play some of the theme song, and you see if you can tell what movie it came from. Let's see if you recognize this one. Don't seem
I know
to be any lyrics.
I know it.
Yeah, what is it?
The Majesty's Secret Service, because that one has no lyrics. It's the only one.
Wow. Awesome. That's fantastic. All right. And let's see if I can find another one. Does this one ring a bell to you?
When you were young and your heart was an open book.
Live and Let Die?
It is Live and Let Die. Look at you. All right, you're 2 for 2. And let's do one more, okay?
Okay.
Let's see if you know this one.
That one's easy. Goldfinger!
Oh, wow. Look at you. All right, we got to do one more then since you just got three in a row. Let's see if I can stump you with one more.
Thunderball.
Wow. That was like two notes and you already had it. You're amazing. You are a big James Bond fan, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes, you are. All right. What is there anything else that you... What is it you like about them besides that? Are they fun, or is it the music, or action-adventure, or what?
Pretty much, the first thing that I like about all of them is that they all have... Pretty much, he's always kissing a girl, which I always like to close my eyes and say, yuck, 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 yuck.
Pretty much everybody your age, yep. If you had to, other than Dr. No, if you had to sit down and watch one, if you're going to sit down and watch one, if you were going to watch one that wasn't Sean Connery.
What?
If you're going to watch one that wasn't Sean Connery, which one do you think you would probably like?
Does Goldfinger have Daniel
Craig? No, do you think about Daniel Craig is Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, and Skyfall. What about On Her Majesty's Secret Service with George Lazenby? You liked that one, didn't you?
Yep.
Because it had Tracy.
Tracy.
Yeah, you like Tracy.
Tracy.
Okay. Any other things you want to add about your James Bond fandom? So what do you have to say about Goldfinger?
He wanted to rob pretty much the whole place, all of the places, to get the gold.
And that place is called Fort Knox.
Fort Knox.
That's where all the gold is. That's right, because he loves gold.
He's the man that...
that loves the gold.
He's the man that loves that gold. Oh, Sean Connery.
Okay.
Sean Connery is my favorite. And he's pretty much funny.
He is cool.
Yeah.
Oh, your favorite line of mine from Diamonds Are Forever. Gotta lean forward to the microphone. Your favorite line of mine from Diamonds Are Forever is, we'll be Mr. Went and Mr. Kidd. He took ill.
Bitten by the bug.
Very good. All right. Any last thoughts before we wrap up our little installment?
One more thing.
Mm-hmm.
Please do not stop listening to the White Rocket people.
The White Rocket podcast?
I think this thing is awesome.
Cool. Are you going to have your own podcast one day?
Yeah.
Then maybe tell your audience about what you are interested in and talk about stuff that they want to hear about?
I think I'm going to do an art one.
An art podcast. All right.
There's two things that I totally love. James Bond and art.
All right. That was Mira Plexico, big James Bond fan. She and I just went on a marathon viewing of the whole just about run of the movies again, so... She's pretty much grown up seeing them all and is a real expert. Thank you very much again.
Annabelle.
Bye-bye. And that brings us to the conclusion of part one of two of the Sean Connery James Bond films. We will be back soon with part two and the return of John Ringer to discuss the remaining films, as well as the Lazenby movie. Because I made the decision in post-production to break this episode in half and make the series six episodes instead of the original three in order to give each one the proper amount of time and not have these episodes run 2 hours long. So I'd like to thank John Ringer for coming on today. We'll have him back. We'll pick back up basically where we left off on the next episode with the remaining movies. Meanwhile, be sure to visit www.whiterocketbooks.com for the best in science fiction and fantasy and nonfiction books. And check out the other great shows on the Earth Station One network. The Rocket's going to get on out of here for this week, and we will see you down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed. This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.